Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning. Welcome back to the third and final hour of the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show on this Open Line Fun Sunday. I'm your host, Captain Mickey Eastman, producing the Outdoor Show this morning.
King of the phone lines. It's Johnny B here.
That's it. If we can just get somebody to call in, it's
yep.
A little slow on the sickos this morning.
713-572-4610.
That's it. That's the number. 713-572-4610. Now, real quick, I'll throw this out there. Coming up June 10th through the 12th, you may want to check this out for your kids this summer. Give them something to do. They're into the outdoors, and it's a 2020 Game Warden Youth Camp. And that's going to be held out of the refuge over here east of town in Anahuac. But what it consists of, it's a three-day camp. It'll include waterfowl identification and regulations. They'll have reptile and amphibian identification, so they'll have plenty of gators and snakes to look at over that way, too, and illicit trade. You know, they'll have fish identification and regulations, fishing and hunting compliance checks, deer decoy operations, canine use and conversation or conservation for law enforcement, and special guest speakers. And federal wildlife officers and Texas Parks and Wildlife game wardens, they'll be instructing and mentoring the three-day program. And camp will run daily from 8 in the morning till 4 p.m. That's June 10th through the 12th. And the fee for the three-day camp is very reasonable, $125. That covers the cost of all your course materials, hat, T-shirt, lunch, snacks, drinks, and a challenge coin and completion certificate. And scholarship is available. And space is limited. Final application deadline for this event will be April 15th at 4 p.m. You can register by turning in the application and an essay, max limit 1,000 words, written by the participants stating the reason why they want to be a game warden. You know, a lot of kids, they look forward to that, and they really look up to our game wardens. I'll have to say that our game wardens these days are real compliant with youth and intermingling with, you know, all of us outdoorsmen, and they're just good people like we are, and they want to make a difference and preserve our future wildlife and game and everything else in the state. And in person, the Youth Game Warden Camp, Anahuac National Wildlife Refuge. It'll be at the Visitor Center. That's at 4017 FM 563 in Anahuac, Texas. And by mail, you can write to Youth Game Warden Camp, Anahuac National Wildlife Refuge, P.O. Box 278, Anahuac, Texas 77514. Or you can apply by fax at 409-267-4314. So, or you can go online and check it out online, and it'll be on their site. All right, let's get to our phone lines. We finally have the sickos have awakened. I'm glad to see that. Let's get to it on this rainy morning in certain areas. Next up is Gus. Gus, you're up. Good morning. Good morning, Gus.
Yeah, this isn't Gus. This is Harry Heine and Alvin.
Okay, Harry. I had Gus on there. Sorry. What's up?
I just was reminding about a cute lab joke this morning.
A cute lab joke?
Yes, sir.
All right.
My daughter-in-law and son-in-law, my daughter and son-in-law live in Iowa County on some acreage. And my son-in-law, he's a big hunter, always keeps several labs. And here a couple years ago, he got a lab, a yellow lab. He named him Trump. And And my daughter's got a bunch of chickens, and she loves her chickens, and she's one of them that she won't kill a chicken. Well, when it quits laying, it just quits laying. It don't stop eating and living, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, old Trump was, she noticed him laying out there on the porch one day taking a nap. And every time one of them old chickens would lay an egg and cackle, you know, yeah, they'll lay an egg and jump up off the nest and flap their wings and cackle a little bit. Old Trump, his head went up, his eyes got wide open. He heard this old hen cackling. Man, he jumped off that porch and run out there to the hen house. My daughter said, what in the heck is that dirty hen old buzzard doing now? Well, he had him a way he could climb up into that hen nest, and he grabbed that egg.
Uh-oh, an egg-sucking lab. Uh-oh.
And she noticed her eggs fell off.
She wasn't getting me.
She didn't thought they just quit laying. You and Crocker were talking about their dogs a while ago, and I thought, yeah. I'm 83 years old and retired, and I'm can't hardly get around, but I've been listening for years. This is the first time I've ever called in.
Well, we appreciate the call. It's good to hear from you. And once a dog starts sucking eggs, there's no cure for that. I mean, it's
they fixed it where he couldn't climb up in there.
Yeah,
there was some lumber or something laid in that hen house or something stored where he could climb up to them hen nests.
Yeah.
But Jay fixed it where he couldn't get to the hen eggs. So, I just had to tell you, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
All right. Well, Harry, thanks for the call. Appreciate it, buddy.
No problem.
Hey, thank you. See you, man. All right. Who's up next? Let's go to Steve on the next call. Steve, good morning. You're on the Outdoor Show.
Good morning, Mickey. I'm glad you appreciated the picture of the fallow deer I sent you.
Yeah, and that red elk, man. That was beautiful.
The red stag. I called right after I shot him down in the South Island, New Zealand. But the funniest thing was on that fallow deer, the guy said, depending on the way out there, he said, you're just here to hunt red stag, aren't you? And I said, yeah, that's all I want to hunt. And he said, well, how long did you fly to get here? I said, 18 hours. He said, then you're just going to hunt one animal? I said, well, he said, well, he's a fallow deer. He says, $400 for a doe. I said, well, I could do that. He says, a couple thousand for a regular one. And he says, and it goes on up, you know, but double that for a big one. I said, okay. So I said, I'll do it. We go around the corner in this mountain. He goes, that's the biggest fallow deer I've ever seen. I said, I don't see it. And we looked, and my wife could see it, and she said, there it is. And all you could see was a horn. And we waited for about an hour and a half and finally took it. And he said, golly, it's huge. And he said, we're going to be ticked off at the lodge when I get back with it. So I said, all right. So then the next day we went up and found that red stag, and I took him. Those were both with a 308, just a 150 grain bullet, and they will do a number on stuff.
Yeah, they will.
I've never had one actually measured for the SCI tournament or SCI record book.
Right.
And the folks at B&B Taxidermy said, we'll measure it for you, and you saw the score sheet on him. But I'm pretty excited about it. You take four pictures of the animal and then send it in with a score tag, and then they rank you. And when I talked to him at SCI, I said, our record's about 261, so he's up there. But he's not. He'll never be the biggest one. But I thought you'd get a kick out of him.
No, that was a gorgeous animal. Man, what a fallow deer. I didn't know they got that big. That's huge. Yeah. Thank you.
I think the most.
What did that fallow score? What was the score on that? I forgot. It was
38 and 4/8.
Man, 238 and 4/8. What a monster. What's the record?
261.
That's not far off, man. That's that is not that much.
No, and there's just a few in between, because I started looking at the record book, and there's just a few in between him and
man.
Not big animals. I mean, that was like a big, I'd say about 160-pound, 165-pound South Texas deer.
Yeah.
Not a huge, you know, animal, but they carry a big rack.
No, they carry around a big rack. They got to have a strong neck to hold all those horns up, buddy.
Yeah, I hear you.
And that red stag, that was almost 400 inches. That's two great animals right there, bud.
Yeah. Well, and I think I told you when I contacted those folks, and I was, you know, I said, well, here's what I want to hunt. And they
Where was this at? In New Zealand?
In New Zealand.
Yeah.
It's a ranch called Lathan Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And wonderful people, and they put on a good show, and nice place to stay. It's just gorgeous. It's a 30,000 acre ranch, free range.
Awesome.
And that, I've got pictures of that stag, the fallow deer, and we're at 6,000 feet, and we're right on, sitting on the edge of the mountain, and you can look down in the valley. It's just beautiful.
Breathtaking pictures, man. You know, and that's, until you go and experience something like that, you just, you know, pictures don't do it justice till you see it firsthand.
Yeah. Well, it's in your mind, and it's your mind becomes part of you. But then when you have a picture like that, it's, golly.
Brings back memories.
It sure does. But the funniest part about the whole thing is I work for a fairly good-sized financial institution, and I work for the top guy in this region. He's turned over a couple times, and I sent it to the number two guy in the whole company. I said, here are these pictures. And he sent it back to me. He says, and now we're 18, in New Zealand, you're 18 hours ahead of Houston. And he goes, Steve, we got another change. I went, oh, my gosh. You know, the third boss in 2 years. And I said, what can that be? And I laid down and we're in Queensland. Next morning, he sent me a note and said, here's who's coming. And the guy is just a wonderful, wonderful individual. And I said, oh, I can't wait till he gets here. So it was a good hunt, all in all. So,
yeah, everything turned out wonderful then. Yeah, the hunt and coming home.
Exactly.
Sometimes you dread that.
You never know what you get.
Well, I heard that, man. I've been there and done that. That's pretty good. Well, hey, I appreciate the story, Steve. And okay. Always stay in touch, man, because you're an interesting fellow. You get to go do some cool things that are definitely on my bucket list that I probably won't ever be able to do. But I love sharing stories and hearing other people's stories like that.
I'm going to go. I've got a couple spaces left in the wall. I got four animals coming in from Africa. And I'm going to go out and shoot something out near San Antonio.
Yeah.
And I've also hooked up with some guys from Spain. I'm going to go shoot on Ibex next spring.
Cool.
So, anyway.
Those are beautiful, too.
And I love your show. I've been listening to it since 1992.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate it.
Okay. And I do love the Belleville meat market. I just too bad.
You got that right. I can't wait to go out there this week and pick up my order. It should be ready. I'm telling you, I'm ready for some fresh stuff, man. Nothing like it.
Well, they're first-class people. So,
they are. I mean, I spent a pretty good while with Marcus last Monday when I dropped my two deer off and he's just the Poffenbergers, you know, him and Jared and Danny, their dad. You just can't beat people like that. They're first class.
Well, it reflects in the way the employees work.
Yes, and it does.
From where you drop off your animal to inside the store, the folks in there make sandwiches or eat pie, whatever. They're just first class, just friendly, you know, down home Texas people.
That's it.
They feel good.
Well, it reflects, you know, what kind of bosses they are, and if their employees are happy, you know, everything's in, in order.
Yep.
Makes a big difference. Attitude reflects leadership. That was one of my favorite lines out of a movie. And remember that? Remember the Titans? That was a great show.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, hey, it was good talking to you. And don't be a stranger, Steve. Good Sunday, man. Have a great day.
You too. See ya.
All right. Take care. All right. Coming up after this break, we'll have Cliff, Ray, Craig, and Eve.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show, the Big Bopper. Man, that's going back. Man. All right, let's get back to our phone line, shall we, on this open line fun Sunday. All right, next up is Cliff. Cliff, good morning. You're on the Outdoor Show. What's up?
Good morning, Captain Mickey. I don't have anything as exciting as hunting in New Zealand or Africa, but I do have a tip on the Thunder Vest. I've had experience, and I've had other people that had experience with it. I had a boxer for years, and she was used to everything, but the deal was my dad, he liked to sit in the garage and watch TV and watch the traffic. We go sit in the garage, watch TV, watch the traffic. Well, 2 weekends in a row, there was a tremendous thunderstorm hit, and a big old lightning bolt hit across the street. And I thought we were going to get electrocuted because our feet were kind of in the water in the garage. And then the next weekend, a major thunderstorm happened, and it blew a tree down right behind the garage. So after that, the dog was totally freaked out for years. And so what we figured out was somebody had come up with this Thunder Vest. Well, my mistake was, and here's a tip, is you put the vest on them when it's good weather and get them used to it. I'm sure they probably wear jackets and everything, but these are real tight. And so you put it on it when it's good weather. And what I did was when we got it, put it on her when the first thunderstorm happened. So, you know, it really didn't, she didn't like it. You know, it was too tight. You know, boxers have big chests. But what works is you put it on them when it's good weather, and then they're used to it because the storm may sneak up on you and you don't have time to put it on. If you put it on in the middle of the storm, it's really not going to work that well. So you do.
Well, I think you'll just freak the dog out. That'll even reflect too much attention towards the storm. She goes, oh my gosh, you know, they're putting this on, bad weather's coming. And you know, that's one of the things I read about the vest when I went ahead and agreed to buy it. So, that's a good tip. I'm glad you brought that up because get them used to it.
Yeah, you get them used to it while it's good weather, and then they don't freak out and know that the storm is coming. So that didn't work so well for her. I mean, it worked a little bit, but she didn't like having it on. Finally, what I had to do was I had to get her some doggy Xanax from the vet and give her that and, you know, kind of calm her down a little bit. But they do work, though. I know they work. It's just you got to do it right. Can't wait to put it on when the storm is happening. Anyway, that's my tip of the day.
Well, I appreciate that. All right. Good talking to you, Cliff. See you, buddy. All right. Take care. All right. Next up, Ray in Highlands. What's up, Mr. Standley?
Well, I just Johnny B's he's got the big bopper on that stuff. Where in the world? That has to be before he was born.
It was, but he knows his music. I'll hand you that, man. He likes a lot of the stuff we like. He's a music lover. Kind of like in Tombstone and said, music lover, you're next.
Yeah, brother.
That's
well,
it.
We got, last week I went to New Braunfels and got our friend Denny married off again.
I heard all about that. I heard he found him a really classy lady, and he won't have to spend the rest of his life without a companion. That's
and that
wonderful.
Is that is a wonderful, wonderful thing to happen, and she is great. And, of course, you know I love Denny, and I'm just glad to see he's going to have a nice partner to stroll through the golden years.
Boy, I used to love that house you and Denny had out there at Cross Bayou, man. That boy, that saved me and Blaine's bacon so many times. We'd be back at way back there in the back of that bay, and them bad, bad storms would roll up, and we'd duck in there and tie our boats off and go sit on the back porch till it was over with. That was good stuff.
I tell you what, I still, and you've heard me say this a million times, I still can't even look that way when I go out Cross Bayou. It just breaks my heart that it happened the way it happened. But, you know, times change things. And
oh, yeah.
I guess with all the people getting killed on Cross Bayou these days, maybe I'm glad I'm not making that trip like I used to.
Too much traffic in that marsh, man, and alcohol related at that, you know. And it's,
so anyway, after the big wedding, we went to Sister Creek Ranch, my sister's ranch, and she was taking delivery on 4 black bucks that they had bought, trying to stoke up their exotics on their ranch. And I tell you what, that is a weird, strange, fun to watch creature.
Yep, I like the way they doing, 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 bounce around, man, like they got springs on their feet.
You know, they the guy that they bought them from was delivering them, and of course they were in the back of a stock trailer, and he opened that gate up, and those four. I mean, as soon as the very first step they take, the next one is about 15 feet in the air.
I'm telling you.
And actually, it was 4 does and 1 buck, and the buck just sailed off out to the back of the ranch somewhere, but the does, they went out about 50-100 yards and just stopped, and of course all stayed together, and they eventually started milling around the ranch, and by the time we left, you know, they were running around with all the other deer. But that's a fun thing to watch. And you know, now she's got those fallow deer, and you know, Chris Crocker's voice rings in my ears as I see this unfold right in front of my eyes. He said, better watch out if you start getting those fallow deer. They get domesticated really, really quick, especially the white ones. And he was saying that his customers started feeding them, and they started following them around the campsite like dogs. And sure enough, Beth bought 6 of them and had them delivered to the ranch. And, of course, they were pretty small, still young. So put them in the horse barn in the horse stable for the first little while, just to kind of get them used to what's going on, fed them a little bit. And they let them out of the stall, tried to get them to go out in the ranch. And
they didn't want to leave.
They just hung around, tried to come in snippies and everything else. So finally we rounded them up. Bruce, Beth's husband, rounded them up and had one of the hands take them off on the backside of the ranch that's fenced off from the headquarters section to get them kind of used to nature. And that worked for about 2 or 3, oh, I guess maybe 2 or 3 weeks, but they eventually found their way back. And I tell you what, they're just like pets, Mickey. They're just very docile, very that follow you around. They'll eat out of your hand and everything else. So they're anything but wild. And when I look on the internet about they're offering hunts where you can kill them, I don't know how in the world you chase them far enough away to where you can shoot one. But anyway,
well, the ones in the wild, like an open range, you know, they're probably different because they hadn't had any human contact, and it's probably a little different that way.
So that brings this up, and one of the previous callers was talking about the record fallow and how it measured. If you Google them up, you notice how weird their horn their antlers are. I wonder yeah. how in the world they go about measuring that to determine what it is, because, you know, I don't know how to explain it. I mean,
well, I'm sure there's instructions on how to measure them, you know, just like measuring a white-tailed deer, you know, with the G2s and, you know, measuring all your tine length and your spread, inside spread, and then your mass and, you know.
Well, it's all mass. And
it's all mass. It's like a moose, you know.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely. And it's got a jillion little tines on it, so I don't know.
I'm sure you have to measure every one of those from the base where they come from the mass to the tip of the tine. I'm sure all those are measurable. And
well, they are, but, you know, I'm looking at a picture of one now. They can't be more than 3 or 4 inches, but they all add up. So
right.
Anyway, it'd be interesting to see how they did it. Well, they had, you know, they all those gentlemen, I call her ranch a gentleman's ranch because they don't hunt anything. All they do is raise stuff to look at and keep it pretty. But they have kind of got them a rancher's economy going where they trade back and forth. So she's been trading some of those Pierre David that they got a bunch of now for longhorn steers.
Yeah.
And they got a couple of longhorns in there because the pair that they had was getting pretty old and they expected them to expire pretty quick. And so that was a couple of months ago, so they lived a lot longer. But the steer died this weekend, and they called. Bruce wanted to have the head and horns stuff, so they called a taxidermist down in Johnson City. And he came up to the ranch and cut that steer's head off, threw it in the back of his pickup, and took off down the road to get it stuffed. So that's gonna make a pretty nice mount.
Yeah. Or that would Boss Hogg would like to have those. Put them on the front of his El Dorado Cadillac.
That's what I told Beth.
Remember that?
Beth's got one of those brand new Escalade SUVs.
Yeah, put them on there.
I tried to convince her to put them on the front of that. So when they're going up and down 1376, where there's the hazard of running over a deer every 100 yards, at least she'd have something to fight back with.
Be but the anyway, talk of the town.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Ray. I got to run, buddy.
Well, it's raining in Highland, so I think I'll go outside and see if I can get my umbrella and go get the paper.
There you go. Get that paper, baby. All right, Ray.
Okay.
See you, man.
If you go out tomorrow, well, I'll probably see you out there. I'm looking to burn some gas, too.
I know. I need some therapy. All right, buddy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
See
you. Take care. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. Johnny V, I believe that's CCR, Who'll Stop the Rain?
You are correct.
Boy, 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 you are rolling them out on me this morning, my friend. And who will stop the rain? I was looking at radar during the break, and This will be out of here, it looks like, in a couple hours, so it's all good. We just got to get it. It's really heavy along the coast between Bay City, Lake Jackson, all through Galveston, heading east, and a little bit outside the loop now, going east of town through Pasadena and over LaPorte Way, out my way, but nothing behind that, so apparently we'll get a wind switch and clear this on out of here and salvage part of our day anyway. All right. Let's get to our phone lines. We've got Craig, Eve, and Guitar Dave to wrap it up in the final segment today, so let's get to it. Craig, you are up. What's going on?
Morning, Mick. How you doing, man?
Oh, Craig, not a lot, man. Just it's all good. It's just good to be here, my friend.
There you go. Yeah, we got a little water down here.
Yeah, you think? Man, y'all been getting smoked.
Yeah, I've got water in my garage, and I'm sure the streets are kind of minor flooding out there. So,
yeah, I saw a minor flood warning for Galveston earlier popped up on my phone.
Yeah, we don't need any more water.
Nope.
So, anyway. Well, man, I really did a bonehead thing last Monday. I went duck hunting by myself.
Uh-oh.
And, man, I got out there, and I had plenty of water, but I had plenty of wind, and I'm loaded down. So I barely made it out to my blind. And so I had plenty of ducks coming in on me, but they were flaring off. And it was just good to watch them. You know, there was a new bunch down. But anyway, about 8:30, I'm starting to notice, man, I'm losing water. Big time, and the wind is still steadily blowing. It's 20-25.
A north wind?
Yeah, it's supposed to be northeast. And I didn't check the tides. Then I got stuck with a sled, and man, it was just about on the mode, a panic mode. It's like, what am I gonna do? Because every step was up to my knee. And,
Lord.
I made it over to a little channel in this bayou and paddled my way up to about 100 yards from where I put in. And I tell you, man, I was mud head to toe, and I just sat there and just about kissed the shoreline. I mean, if I didn't have a heart attack doing that, I guess I'm in pretty good shape.
Hey, that was your stress test for the year right there, buddy. Hey, I've been there. I think at my age, that would have probably killed me. That would have been it. Y'all could have just called Life Flight and said, hey, just send a casket. You know, just we're going to load this guy up. Y'all go ahead and take him to the morgue.
I mean, I only threw like four decoys out from the blind, and because the wind was so bad, it was just like, what am I doing out here? I know Kitty would have said, we're not going out in that stuff.
When I was 12 years old, a good friend of mine, he's the one that actually got me into duck hunting big time, and his mother had a big old station wagon. And we'd put that little flat bottom of ours in the back with it hanging out the back on the tailgate with a flag on it. And she'd take us down to the goo hole. And we'd put our little five-horse duck twin Evinrude or whatever that motor was back then. And we'd putt across the Lost Lake out there and go throw out a little spread of decoys and duck hunt. I mean, we went one morning and Norther rolled in just like you're talking about. Now, that's a long ways across Lost Lake back to the goo hole, the old goo hole back in those days. And it's kind of where Hugo is now. And we get through duck hunting. We smoked them and packed up our decoys, went to the boat, and the boat's anchored up, and it's sitting in mud with the water about 200 yards out there behind the boat.
Wow.
So we raise the engine up, and we start pushing that thing in the mud. And, I mean, it's knee-deep to waist-deep every step. You'd have to inch the boat up, pull yourself out, step forward, get your grip. We inched that boat all the way across that lake like that. Once we got the water where the boat would float, we still couldn't run it. We'd get in it, and it'd be on bottom.
Yeah.
And we had to push it all the way back to the ramp, and we looked at each other. We laid down. Now, we were in shape. We were young. And we looked at each other and said, we're never going duck hunting again. Well, guess what? The next morning we went again. That was during the Christmas holidays when we were out of school. Oh, we were sick. But, boy, that's the most miserable. I mean, and you're talking right. Panic mode sets in. But we're panicking because there's no, you know, you didn't have cell phones or anything. There's nobody to come get you. We're the only idiots out there. And we got to get back to the ramp because his mom's going to be there at noon.
Right.
Needless to say, we were about 2 hours late. It took us 4 hours to get across there.
Wow. Well,
it was terrible. Wet, muddy, nasty.
I need to check those tides next time I do something like that.
Well, and plus that north wind, it blew it out. You know, I'm sure you had a good strong outgoing, but still with a strong outgoing and that wind combined, it just flushed.
It did. It flushed right before my eyes, and they were calling for northeast. That wasn't no northeast wind. We would have had water.
No, if it had been northeast, you wouldn't have lost your water.
Exactly. I had more northwest, northwest, and it.
That's the worst.
I sure did it. But anyway,
lessons learned. See, you can teach an old dog new tricks. You know better now.
That's right. Hey, on a serious note, I need prayer of some of the sickos. My little daughter, Lexi, she's going to have her surgery in the morning. And I promised her that I would get on the radio and get some silent, positive thoughts and stuff towards her. She's going to have that stricture taken out of her colon. So,
Bless her heart. I hope it all comes out good for her. She's a sweet little girl. Well, she's not a little girl anymore, but...
No.
I've known her since she was a little girl, fished with her, and we wish her the best, Craig.
Yeah, she's gone through a lot, and I want her to get this thing behind her so she can go forward.
That's it. Move on with her life.
There you go. All right, Mickey. It's starting
she's
to come
a good one.
Again.
She likes the outdoors, and what I like about her, she's like her mama. She loves animals.
Yeah, a little
too much. All of them, they love the animals, man.
If we had the money we spent on feed, I'd be retired by now.
Hey, if you had the real money, you'd live on an animal farm with Kitty running that place.
Well, that's her ultimate dream there.
I bet.
But anyway.
Well, cool, Craig.
Right,
we wish the best for Lexi, and prayer works, man.
Yes, sir.
All right, buddy.
Right,
good to hear from you, man. Watch them duck hunts. All right, see you. All right. Craig and G-Town weighing in. Good guy right there. Fished with him many a time, and he's a great outdoorsman. He loves it like we do. All right, next up, let's go to Eve. Eve, good morning. You're on the Outdoor Show.
Hey, Captain Mickey.
Hello.
It's E, like the letter.
Oh, E. Okay, I've got Eve on my screen here. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
We'll just go with E. I like that.
I'll pray for little Lexi, and you're right, prayer does work, exclamation point. I had a question for you, and just prior to that, I want to also ask you, or just mention for your listeners, regarding the Port of Houston has a boat tour of the ship channel. Have you ever been on that?
No, I haven't. I've been invited a couple of times when the Galveston Bay Foundation's had some of their, you know, meetings and events like that to go on it, but I've never had the chance to do it yet.
So I used to teach biology and science, you know, in Houston, and I took my students on the tour before. I've been on it. It's phenomenal. I'll tell you why it's so important as well. It's on the east... Like that, it's near the East Loop, near the Clinton exit. You can access the port, and you go down, and there's a boat, and they have amenities and things like that. The reason why it's so important is because when you go through the ship channel, you'll see aspects of that you never would have imagined or seen. You know, we see the big ships, you know the Gulf Coast, you know it better than anyone, but you know, when you see these monster ships up close, it's amazing. It's just amazing.
I drive by them all the time with my little boat, my 24-foot boat. I feel like a little Cheeto running next to those big ships in the channel out there. That's I know it's overwhelming. Right. My customers love it, especially when we go upstream where you're talking about to fish.
Right, and when you go on that tour, though, you really get a bird's eye view, the docks, all of that, and then you see them on each side of you. But I brought that up because, you know, I read just, you know, I would say maybe December, you know, about the, and I wanted to, that's where my question's coming from, about the plans, the widening of the ship channel. And, you know, originally when they dredged, it was 4 feet deep. And now, you know, they're going to make it even bigger when you see the big ships there now and you know what's coming. I mean, these are monster boats, like the round storage containers that store the gas. They're going to have three of those. Like when you drive down 288, and you see those big round storage. They'll have three of those.
Yeah, the storage tanks, the big tank farms. Yeah.
Yeah. Three per ship is what it looked like in the picture. And so I was just going to ask you, regarding that, what scares you the most about that widening that's coming, given that it's so monster?
Well,
environmental-wise.
Yeah, and I knew that. I knew that's what you meant. We've already experienced the fallout from this last deepening and widening, you know, that 10-year project.
Right.
And it is in my views as being an outdoorsman and a fisherman and everything and lived on this bay system all my life. Ecologically, I've seen a lot of changes made to shoreline structure and habitat that's been destroyed from it, from the silt and the fallout, especially. And the thing that a lot of people don't see is what's on the bottom of the bay floor are oyster beds.
Right.
That is that's the lifeblood of Galveston Bay is live oyster reefs. And over the years, due to freshwater, hurricanes, the dredging of the channel, all of that is correlated into destroying that habitat. And we've lost 2/3 of it. And we were the biggest oyster industry in the country until then. And now with I understand that they've got new proposals. They're wanting to make the ship channel even wider and deeper to accommodate all these ships coming through the Panama Canal. And
it's going to be a done deal. And that was just one other comment I was going to make, is that the Port of Houston, the board, Exxon Mobil, and I can't just single them out. Let's just say oil and gas. You know,
well, yeah, it's just all industry
combined.
They've got
people on the board. And what I'm saying is, or I'm just asking you, I can't say, I don't know if there's the representation that's needed from those persons, you know, like yourself, who really live in the bay and, you know, hunt and fish.
Yeah, it's unfortunately, Galveston Bay is... I will say one thing about Galveston Bay that I've learned over the years. It's a very lucrative system. It has a way of repairing itself and recovering pretty fast, especially with, you know, after disasters like big hurricanes and these, you know, we've had 5 years of extreme flooding. I mean, look at the Harvey flood. That was biblical. And, we're starting to recover from that. We bounce back pretty fast environmentally, but there's a lot of things. I mean, to have the perfect ecosystem, I mean, you'd have to do away with all industry around here, but then we'd have no commerce at all to support the bay. Something that's bad for it actually ends up being good for it down the road. And that's what I love about the Galveston Bay Foundation. They're always involved in grass planting projects, oyster restoration projects, everything like that, and they got all these wonderful volunteers that get involved to make our bay system better and to clean it up, so to speak, and stop erosion and these kind of things that we've watched happen over the years that have been detrimental to the bay. But yet we all know that the ship channel and big commerce upstream, you know, that's one thing that hurts us in some retrospect, but then in another, a lot of money and allocation and funds come in from those industries to repair the bay. And it's, as long as we can stay on top of it and get some kind of balance between the two, well, it will survive. But we've all got to work together to do it, you know, as far as conserving on fish and what we do, you know, as far as catch rates and things, and then people not, I mean, you wouldn't believe the trash. You know, they have these pickup programs that they do every year where they clean the bay shores from what people put in the water. And my only, my biggest complaint is what comes down that ship channel from the city of Houston itself through Buffalo Bayou from the litter.
Oh, yeah.
And then, then all the commerce up and down, ships and barges and everything else. I mean, you don't realize how bad it is till you fish up there, and say you're anchored up fishing, and you watch the tide coming by and all this garbage in the water. You know, it's little pieces of plastic and, I mean, pieces of rope and everything else is just discarded into the channel that could be disposed of in a better way, you know, if you get what I'm saying.
Can I ask you one brief question?
Yes.
Okay, in the Great Lakes, I also lived in the Great Lakes area. And they would have, you know, ships that would come through, and certain types of ships, where they're from, et cetera, larger, they might bring import, whatever it is, fill in the blank, creatures that can take over. So my question is, just a secondary question, with the new dredging, with these extra large ships that are coming in, and where they're coming from, do you have any concerns for imports
just the fallout from the dredging itself, from the contaminants that are in the mud itself on the bottom of the channel. That's my biggest concern. But I'm sorry, I've got to run. I'm out of time.
Yeah, you take care.
And I appreciate the call, and thanks for bringing that up. Good conversation. Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Ciao.
You too. All right. Take care. All right, that's all the time we have for today. Guitar Dave, I'll get you next week, man. You snooze, you lose. But anyway, Johnny B., you have a good week, and appreciate what you do here at the Outdoor Show. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back next week right here at Sports Radio 610 KILT Houston.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.